To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for a return to the most brutally barbaric and bombastically savage of all species, naturally being of the green-skinned hordes of the orcs. The anarchic tribes have thus far been recorded in nearly every corner of the vast cosmos, ranging from the cold and hostile wastelands of the ghoul stars to the roiling hellscapes found within the Eye of Terror and to almost every world in between. Now, this wouldn't be so bad if they kept to themselves as loose tribes of ferals, but most unfortunately, that is not to be the case, as every single orc, no matter where he is to be found, only craves one thing: war. We might think that the Imperium of Man is an empire defined by war, since every aspect of their society is generally focused towards supporting the iron colossus of its galaxy-spanning military. But even then, they cannot compare to the raw fixation that your average greenskin holds towards charging forth and getting stuck in with a good fight. This monomaniacal obsession with violence eclipses all thought, as what else is there to think about when there's a brawl to be had? If we were to observe an orc tribe for just a few hours, we'd naturally end up witnessing innumerable squabbles between the boys, with the brutes not really caring for their own safety as they grab their shooters to settle a dispute on who has the shiniest teeth. Again, if the orcs just fought each other in their own camps, it'd be fine, and they wouldn't pose all that much of a threat to anyone but themselves. Unfortunately, however, they're almost never content to remain within their camps. When a group of orcs is large enough, the biggest and the greenest of their lot will rise up as the new boss. And with a horde of orcs at his disposal, the petty brawls of his camp will suddenly seem rather insignificant, and he will instead decide that a better fight is sure to be found elsewhere. This will be the first step in the establishment of a war, which is the crude name they have given to the massive campaigns that often erupt out of seemingly nowhere, with the war frenzy of the boys building up like some gathering storm raging up above. One moment, a region might suffer from only scattered orc raids by bone-headed ferals. But once a critical mass of greenskins is reached, then their collective desire for conflict will become too much to ignore, and the world will soon find itself engulfed beneath an unstoppable tide of the orcs. The momentum of a war is quite an amazing thing, as it seems as though the greenskins produce some bizarre form of communal psychic energy, which only grows in power as more boys get stuck in with the joyous glory of violence, thusly attracting more and more orcs to join, until the war band has swelled to such a gargantuan size that it may ravage entire star systems beneath its wake. Entire populations have been wiped out by a rampaging war. Previously, indomitable armies flattened and entire worlds destroyed, only for the orcs to gather up what scrap they can find before promptly lumbering off to find a new fight. So, if an orc warband is really this powerful and really poses such a threat to the galaxy, perhaps it would be prudent for us to get a firm grasp on how exactly a war may come into being. We will begin by covering the events which may trigger a war to begin. and then of the process to which a boss might assemble an army, and of how they actually launch their terrible attacks. We will then explore how an orc warband actually fights, of what they do once they have won a battle, and of the most common fates to befall a warband once they have run out of steam. But in any event, why faff around with wordy introductions? As for now, my dearest friends, I do believe that it is, once again, time for us to begin. An orc camp might not be the most pleasant place to be, but we will temporarily watch from the shadows, quietly observing the greenskins as we learn of the life cycle to an orc war. To be quite honest with you, in all of galactic history, we have seldom discovered an orc war to have been founded with some deliberate plan. More often than not, they tend to ignite from a confluence of brutal happenstance, where the irrepressibly orky instincts towards violence are drummed up into a fervor by the appearance of a notably mean boss. In a conventional army, a trained officer might need to prove his tactical skill over the course of several decades before he is trusted enough to be promoted to the rank of commander. But of course, the orcs needn't waste time with such things. The war boss will simply be the biggest and meanest greenskin to be found, and who has beaten all of his rivals into submission to unify the local tribes under his rule. All orcs know that might makes right. So when one hulking brute lopes over and clobbers the old boss into a pulpy mess, then naturally he is to be best suited for claiming the title of boss. At which point the other orcs will all flock to his banner. This boss, after taking command of his own tribe, might then decide to venture out to fight a rival group of orcs, with the two forces crashing into each other with all the reckless violence of two mindless beasts. And whoever emerges victorious will then assert his dominance over the greenskins of the rival tribe, thusly growing his warband with frequent bursts of newcomers. This will continue up until the point that a rival boss manages to beat him, at which point the boys will flock to that boss instead, as the orcs really hold no loyalties beyond wanting to follow whoever is big and green. As word spreads of a new war boss clobbering everyone in his path, orcs from around the world might decide to abandon their old tribe to join this new one, purely because the news signals that there is indeed a fight to be had. And so why wouldn't they drop everything to find a way to take part? Sometimes, however, a war will start almost by accident. A minor raid or small skirmish might snowball unpredictably as nearby orc mobs pile in for the fun. It is not unheard of for a localized scrap to suddenly escalate when additional bands of bored orcs show up, each eager to outdo the other in their carnage. This can then leave the main war boss with a surprisingly large army, who seem to just show up out of nowhere, and who will now look to him for directions, lest their assemblage devolve into a bloody fight for power. On that note, orcs are notoriously quarrelsome and hyper-violent. So if they lack an external enemy, then they will gleefully fight each other just for the sake of it. On isolated worlds, whole greenskin tribes have been known to grow restless after going too long without a proper war, prompting a spontaneous mass crumping, where the mob simply falls in on itself, smashing each other as some violent method of letting off a little steam. such outbreaks can actually end up unifying the orcs, as once enough of them are stuck in the brawl, then they may collectively decide to channel this energy outwards and to find a bigger enemy to fight, off-world. There have been a few occasions where a war seems to come from a slightly more mystical origin. Weird boys are orcs who have been blessed, or perhaps cursed, with a powerful connection to the curious psychic energies of the greenskins. It's tricky to explain this psychic energy, as it's distinct from the typical psychic method of reaching into the warp. But in basic terms, all orcs contribute to a field of war energy, which rises in strength as you add more orcs and exponentially intensifies when said orcs are fighting in a battle. The weird boys can manipulate this energy to unleash monstrously destructive psychic powers. But sometimes the sheer currents can overwhelm them, causing their heads to explode in a blast of green lightning. The nearby boys, a bit perplexed, might interpret this as being a sign that Gork and Mork are tired of them sitting around, and that they need to launch a war, lest their own heads similarly detonate. Orcs follow a strong herd mentality, and due to their migratory nature, we often find groups of disparate orc forces merging together, transitioning their minor tribes into one formidable warband. The runtier war bosses don't necessarily need to be clobbered to join, as they can in fact pledge their support to the biggest boss, who might one day be referred to as a warlord. But so long as they remain loyal, then they will be allowed to lead their own mobs, so long as it's always at the direction of the main boss. Take the Armageddon Wars, for instance, and you'll see that Ghazghul brought several dozen mighty war bosses to lead their own groups of warbands, each of whom would usually be considered as terribly powerful, yet who all paled in comparison to the green might of old Ghaz. Finally, the orcs might unite to form a war in reaction to being attacked by an otherwise insurmountable foe. If a rival power strikes an orc world, perhaps in the form of an imperial invasion or tyrannid swarm, then the squabbling tribes might put aside their differences and band together to make sure the coming fight would be good and fun. Should the orcs be victorious, then their victory often snowballs into a new war, as the emboldened horde decides to keep up the momentum and ride the wave of war until it finally and inevitably breaks. It's all well and good to understand how the seeds of a war might emerge, but at the moment, we would just have a war boss with some rather grand ambitions, yet a comically meek force. So with that in mind, what is the actual process of him transforming a few bumbling tribals into an earth-shatteringly vast horde? Well, in the last chapter, I mentioned how a boss might beat a rival into submission, thereby absorbing his mob into the growing warband, or by merging their forces together. And all in all, this leads to a snowballing scenario, where one group will grow large enough to at least stand as a regional warlord. But, though it sounds like a simple process, the boss will always be in danger from ambitious orcs within his own tribe. Every knob will harbor some desire to take charge. After all, he'll be bigger than the runty orcs beneath him, and the boss can't be that much bigger. So maybe one day he decides that the tribe is in need of a little change in management. Many orc warbands die quite early, when a promising boss gets cut down by a rival, who himself is too weak to wrangle control, thusly leading to the entire mob splintering back into nascent tribes, led by feuding runts. Only the strongest and the savviest of bosses can survive this initial period. But those that do will often end up commanding over a horde far larger than he ever thought possible. The most crucial way of gathering an orc army is for the boss to keep the boys as busy as possible, leading them on raids and squig hunts, or by permitting the clan following orcs to set up their own little areas dedicated towards whatever it is that interests them. The raids and small skirmishes will keep the boys loyal, since they'll associate their boss with the joy of scrappy violence. And if word of this spreads, more orcs will begin to flock so that they can take part in all the fun. Similarly, if a clan area becomes quite impressive, perhaps with a large racetrack for the speed freaks, for instance, then other speed freaks will make their journey over. At first, just to partake in their high-octane races, but if these are good enough, then they might just settle down for good and join with the growing warband. As more orcs come together, the subconscious war energy around the tribe will similarly grow. And this creates an almost gravitational pull to orcs across the entirety of the world. And it will eventually attract orcs in nearby star systems, but that comes far later than this meek tribal stage. Lone orcs wandering the wilderness, ferals in distant swamps, and even underground pockets of outcasts will feel the draw of the gathering horde. And what begins as a trickle of roving orcs coming to join the excitement will soon develop into a flood. As the war boss's reputation grows, boys will stream in from every direction as a great migration of greenskins who are chomping at the bit to be a part of the big fight to come. Of course, this process is far from orderly. As multiple mobs converge, they will drag along their old grudges and rivalries, which always erupt into sporadic bursts of violence when in such a densely packed tribe. The clans will generally keep to their own territories, but it's an annoyingly prevalent issue for the orc settlement to devolve into chaotic war, just because two orcs couldn't agree on who had the sharpest chopper. The boss will often find himself preoccupied with putting an end to these violent squabbles, usually through his own brutal intercession, which really has to be vicious enough to dissuade the boneheads from messing up his settlement ever again. Along with the influx of all the common rabble, we'll also find quite a few odd boys joining the camp at this stage. Mechs, mad docs, and weird boys will all approach the warband, with the former two mainly looking to exploit the mass of boys as a means to test out their crude abilities. But the latter will just stick to the outskirts of the camp as their crazed mind struggles to comprehend the growing storm of all this orky energy. An ad hoc shanty town will have blossomed around the original tribal grounds, and the mechs will happily steal whatever scrap they can find to build themselves a nice workshop, replete with gangs of scampering grots to carry around every knick-knack, gubbin, and shiny dial. Those deafeningly noisy factories will constantly belch forth great plumes of acrid smoke, while pools of slick motor oils spill onto the surrounding grounds. But the orcs don't mind, as every now and again they'll see some rich git riding out on a brand new war bike or atop a fancy truck. always prompting the boys to ask the new mad docs to rip out their teeth so that they can get in on all the vehicular action. Before too long, most of the orcs will be rather well equipped by the gangs of mechs, and a few of them might have even decided to become cyborgs, replacing limbs and chunks of their old body with rusted cybernetic implants. By this point, if we were to survey the camp, we would find what is essentially a fully formed army. When an orc settlement grows to such a size that it has dedicated mechs building clanking gangs of death dreads, or where the local runt herders are running out of space to rear their gangs of grots, then it usually means that the boss has successfully drawn the majority of orcs on his continent to join his great war band. So now that the millions, if not billions, of greenskins are all ready, then it would seem that the war is ripe to be launched. And so only one question will remain. Where will the war boss direct this green tide? Before the orcs can wreak havoc on other worlds, they must first conquer their own. By the time a war has swelled to maturity, the greenskin hordes will have overrun virtually all opposition on their home turf. Any remaining pockets of resistance, be they human colonies, alien settlements, or even underling orc mobs that refuse to join, will be made the first targets to the United Warband as it sweeps out across the land in one last rampage of domination. After this, the planet will have become an orc world, where all civilization is reduced to a barbaric scrapyard for the orcs to plunder at will. Having gathered enough boys, guns, and loot to satisfy even the most bellicose war boss, the orcs' thoughts will now turn to their next target. The boss himself is truly now a warlord. And since this planet is firmly in his gnarled green palm, he will cast his bloodshot gaze skyward and begin dreaming of what apocalyptic battles may be found in the inky depths of space. Orky technology, ramshackle and shabby as it may be, is actually quite efficient for the task of interstellar invasions. As soon as the war boss declares his ambitions, the mech boys will get to work by constructing a makeshift fleet for the war. Jagged metal hulks that barely pass for spacecraft are to be hammered and riveted together in record time, with enormous oil-leaking space cruisers and battleships being fashioned out of little more than a pile of scrap, and the mech's belief that if it looks like a ship, then it will probably fly. If they are particularly ambitious, then the mech boys might even attempt to retrofit any asteroids or small moons in their system into gargantuan weapons known as rocks, hollowing them out and installing truly titanic thrusters. And while these are quite tricky to steer, they do make for an excellent invasion method for the more apocalyptic of battles. In some exceptional cases, the orcs might even be successful in locating and capturing a derelict space hulk, which is a Goliath conglomeration of dozens or even hundreds of wrecked starships that have crashed together to form a true abomination of ancient steel. This affront to the machine god will usually act as their indestructible flagship, with the war boss riding at the helm as he directs the coming war. Every available resource on the orc-held world will be siphoned into this hasty armada, with any enslaved masses being forced to labor on forging ammunition and spare parts for the fleet, while hordes of scampering grots scurry about loading supplies, if they can avoid being crushed underfoot, that is. And the mech shops are ordered to operate day and night, modding every transportation vessel with bigger engines, more armor, and far larger guns. The resulting fleet will appear shockingly unstable, but it is undeniably orky, and only a fool would underestimate something that the orcs have specifically built to be as large and violent as this. But the Horde is certainly now poised to absolutely annihilate its target. But rather surprisingly, more often than not, the war boss will have no clear destination at all. Instead, he believes that all the hard work has been done, and now all that is left is to point his Horde at the stars and hope that he finds an enemy. Such aimless wars can drift through the void for years, and if no foe is encountered, then frustration will obviously mount, and the orcs may even turn on their warlord for wasting so much of their time. A mutiny within an orc fleet is essentially a death sentence, since any doubt in the war boss will lead to near every orc launching their own ploy for power. And in a few short hours, the ships will be turning their guns on one another, reducing the entire fleet into little more than a field of crude scrap, and a number of ragged survivors who are more keen to head back home than of faffing about in this cosmic wasteland. With that said, not all bosses are so aimless, and in fact, some are rather deliberate in their planning. They might pick out a target which they know will be teeming with enemies and loot. So, an Imperial Hive world, perhaps, or a rival Orc world, where the promise of a truly colossal battle awaits. The most cunning of greenskin leaders, rare though they are, might even chart multi-world trajectories, plotting to surge through one star system after another in an ever-expanding spiral of war. They also know that each victory will draw in more orcs from afar, further swelling the war with new boys as it carves apart the local systems in its barbaric rampage. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, and after much deliberation, a boss must decide on where will be the first target to his mighty war. With the fleet in orbit and the boys howling for blood, the war boss will give his order to attack, and throughout the fleet will the alarms roar, typically triggered from the slamming of a big red button. What follows will be an invasion entirely unlike anything an Imperial commander might imagine. It will be the most reckless, unrelenting, disordered, and bombastically chaotic of maneuvers ever seen, with the starting gun being of a full-speed descent into the upper atmosphere of the now doomed world. Green-skinned pilots, screaming in glee, will put the proverbial and literal pedal to the metal as they smash their ramshackle ships straight into the enemy planet's surface, preferring a truly dramatic crash landing to any quasi-cautious approach. The rocks will simply be hurled down from orbit, where they descend as balls of incandescent flame, finally impacting in a crust-shatteringly large explosion, reducing entire hive cities to blasted craters in but the blink of an eye. Orc assault crafts will careen down through the contrails of dense exhaust, guns all set to automatic, with not a single pilot concerned about such frivolities as flak fire or finding a safe landing zone. More often than not, the first wave of an orc war will just slam into the world like a meteor swarm. And with each strike, mobs of the hardy orcs will claw themselves out from the wreckage, bellowing their battle cries and firing wildly into the air, howling with feral glee like an excited dog, that indeed, this is the time for a good wah. We often see the orcs as a bunch of bumbling fools who are almost comedic in how inept they are in every field. Yet when it comes to an actual war, all that humor simply melts away. They are a species descendant from a biological weapon and who feel naught but frenzied joy at hurling themselves into the most chaotic of battles, where the hulking brutes will use whatever crude weaponry at their disposal to bludgeon and chop anyone before them. Once upon a target world, the orcs will charge out from the ruins of their transport vessels as a green tide, with the boys packed shoulder to shoulder, their marching just about drowned out by the deafening roar of those millions of alien beasts who live for nothing but the sheer thrills of battle. An unpredictable stream of frenzied gunfire will burst from this horde, with some areas opening up in a glorious burst of daka-daka from the affluent flashgits, and others to be occluded in dense smoke as grot-guided rockets scream skyward. There isn't really a cohesive strategy here, other than every boy wanting to get stuck in, which tends to default to the orcs just rushing forward in a desperate attempt at reaching the front lines, without ever really considering their safety in the charge. At the forefront of this wave will be the loudest and fastest of the orcs, naturally being of the motorized speed freaks. Red always makes an orc go faster, so their bikes, trucks, and scrap tanks will be slathered in a thick layer of scarlet paint, while the roaring engines are pushed into overdrive, carrying the vehicular boys far ahead, as the main mob is left in a storm of dust and exhaust. The speed freaks don't have time to consider the marching orcs, so as they gun their engines to full throttle, they will plow through anything in their path, often running over ranks of their own kind in their eagerness to reach the foe. Enemy flanking positions might be hit especially hard, often by accident, as swarms of spiked orc buggies and half-tracks careen off course. Some of the boys don't even bother slowing down to make their attacks, and they'll just hit the afterburners, ramp themselves off a hillock, and launch themselves directly into the defending lines. On impact, these flimsy vehicles will detonate like makeshift bombs. But the greenskins are resilient buggers, so the driver will brush himself off, pick up his chopper, and start hacking and shooting at whatever dumbstruck defenders manage to survive the crash. The increasingly dark clouds above the horde, typically made up of spent gunpowder, exhaust, and masses of dust, will occasionally be split by flailing shapes screaming across the sky. Crude fighter planes and bombers, often collectively called Daka jets, will zip overhead in unruly swarms, strafing anything that looks like a target as they fill the air with haphazard machine gun fire and wing-mounted rockets. Some will barrel straight down onto entrenched enemy positions in reckless dive-bombing runs, unloading their explosives at the last possible second. But quite a few will simply smash their aircraft into the earth as the pilots forget that they are plunging towards the ground at breakneck speed. Meanwhile, high arching contrails will mark the launch of the strangely disciplined Storm Boys, who have strapped rocket packs to their backs so that they may soar through the air and hopefully reach the enemy in the shortest possible time. Hundreds, if not thousands, of these corkscrewing patterns will appear from the clouds, spiraling out of control before slamming violently into the dirt, to the uproarious amusement of their mates. But others will be able to guide their rockets into the heart of the enemy lines, careening down amidst the defenders in a shower of sparks, bellowing and chopping in a brutal frenzy to sow pandemonium deep within the enemy front. In a rare feat of cunning, the commandos of the Orcs will also launch a concurrent attack within the defenders' fortifications, often infiltrating through service tunnels, utility passageways, or simply by dressing themselves up in preposterous camouflage before tiptoeing in through a back door. Daubed in mud and random debris, they will sneak around from the main front to find a position where they don't have to share in any of the fighting, before tossing stick bombs and unleashing heavy shooter fire into the extremely confused victims, who never considered that a dim-witted orc might actually adhere to something resembling a strategy. But returning to the front lines, we will find that all these preliminary attacks have been rather successful in sowing panic and confusion within the defenders, who must now contend with the realization that the main warband has now reached their compromised walls. Colossal green-skinned warriors, some over 2 meters tall, come thundering in over piles of rubble, swinging their massive axes and firing ramshackle firearms towards whichever direction seems to contain the most fighting. Hacking and smashing through the poor defenders, we will often see the smaller orcs being violently shoved aside by the larger knobs, who are equally keen to find some squishy target to crump. The grots scampering alongside will mostly be trampled beneath the mob, but on occasion, one will be scooped up by a passing boy and lobbed further into the carnage, simply because it seemed like a fun idea. But moments later, that boy will be grabbed by the scruff of his neck by a charging knob and thrown to the ground, before the boss himself barges past, crushing the boy under his mega armored frame. It really just boils down to the idea that the biggest orcs will push their way to the front where they can do the most damage, while the runtier lads are made to keep up and to hopefully find some dregs to clobber once the fighting is done. For the unfortunate defenders on the receiving end, it is like facing an avalanche of hulking savages who are undeterred by the pathetic prodding of tiny bayonets or by the dim flashes of mass-produced lasgun fire. The vicious brutality of melee combat is always the orc's favorite part of a battle, and there can be nothing better than getting up close and personal, where they may literally tear an enemy apart or bludgeon them into a pathetic puddle of bone and pulp. The carnage is almost beyond imagining, as the boys swing choppers with blades almost the size of a man, with enough force to shear heavily armored soldiers limb from limb. The largest orcs, often clad in powered mega armor, will wade into squads of enemies like ogres, lashing out with their cybernetic power claws to rip heads from shoulders and snap torsos in half. If the defenders remain fortified in their bunkers, then gargantuan stompers will lumber forth, crashing into the outer defenses, flattening whatever barricades stand before them, while the stationed infantry are flattened underfoot. In time, the battle will reach its crescendo, as once the boys have been driven into a frenzy, and once enough of them have realized that this indeed will be a mighty, violent scrap, then the psychic energy of their warband will course through every greenskin, prompting them to unleash a terribly thunderous wah. This primordial war cry spurs the orcs into a raging hysteria as they abandon whatever vestigial feelings of self-preservation might remain in their minds and simply hurl themselves into the enemy as a ferocious wave of raw aggression. By this point, with the walls already crumbling and the frenzied orcs deep within the enemy defenses, the battle will be essentially over. It would take an astonishing intervention to prevent the orcs from advancing any further. And so, after a relatively short time, the orcs will have claimed their victory. The once proud city, fortified stronghold, or whatever this target used to be, will have been reduced to a smoking ruin, filled with jubilant orcs, stomping around and celebrating by firing their shooters into the air as they begin to survey the landscape for any possible sources of loot. With the air still hazy from the drifting clouds of smoke and dust, the triumphant boys will be busying themselves with a period of frantic looting and generally barbaric celebration. They are obsessive scavengers, and in order to have another battle of this magnitude, the boss will have ordered for the warband to scrape the battlefield until not a scrap of value has been left behind. The boys of the Deathskull clan are the most strongly interested in such activities, and so will take a central role. But really, it's a task that everyone will take part in, mostly so that the boys may selfishly hoard some new gubbins for themselves. The still-burning wreckage of tanks will be torn apart to source armor panels or intact ammunition, whilst engine parts and fuel lines will be yanked from the chassis, only to be tossed into a growing pile around the base of a newly established mech shop. Weapons will be torn from the hands of the dead, with most of them to be melted down or haphazardly bolted onto an orc's own weapon, as of course greenskins will believe that every gun can be improved upon by the addition of a few extra barrels or a couple new triggers. In a similar manner to how the warband prepared for this invasion, so too will they use the mountain of scrap to reform their fleet, rearm their boys, and generally set themselves up for the continuation of their violent warpath. They will still utilize their grots for common busy work, but some warbands are known to enslave the survivors of their invasion, forcing them to work in the transformed scrapyard of their old home, until they inevitably expire, at which point they will be fed to the squigs and promptly forgotten. At this point, if there was a native orc presence upon the world, it will probably have crawled out from the wilds and sought to join the victorious war boss. It should also be noted that even if the world had never felt the touch of the orcs, that after this invasion, it will never again be free from their presence. For you see, the orcs release spores which settle deep into the earth and will later blossom into runty orcs, with the infestations often being so widespread and hard to shake that it has been recorded for newly formed orcs to emerge from craters on worlds burned to ashes from the sentence of an exterminatus. In any event, despite their victory, the orcs have a relatively short memory, and so even though they just had a phenomenal battle, the boys will already be itching for more. Thus, they won't be all that keen on settling down for too long, and the agitation will almost always lead to the orcs turning on one another to resolve their growing boredom. This isn't anything like a civil war or a vie for power, and it's mainly them letting off a little steam by clobbering one another, before returning to the more important task of gathering scrap or improving their gear. The fights might break out as the boys argue over who deserves the shiniest pieces of loot, but such disputes are expected from such a barbaric army. The war boss must, of course, assert some semblance of order in the new camp by cracking a few skulls together, or by loudly claiming that they'll be off on a new war as soon as dem zoggin mechs find their lucky spanner. Knowing this, the most cunning of war bosses will do what they can to keep the momentum of the war rolling on. Rather than lingering for too long in one place, he will urge the boys to pack up the loot, refuel the trucks, round up the squigs, reload their guns, and prepare to move on to the next war without delay. But no war may last eternal, and any wave, no matter how vast and powerful, will one day reach its furthest extent. And quite soon, the orcs will look back and realize they've reached that high water mark, the place where the war finally broke and began to roll back. There are innumerable ways in which a war can end, but broadly speaking, we may split them into two categories, where there are those which were smashed apart by external foes, or those which imploded from within. The first and most obvious way will be that the orcs eventually meet with an army too strong to overrun, and in the process of blunting their invasion, will the momentum of the warpath collapse. This has occurred numerous times on Imperial fortress worlds, where the indomitable armies of the Imperial Guard, Sisters of Battle, and Space Marines have been successful in finally slaying the war boss and the bulk of his great mob. Deprived of victory, an experience the orcs do not handle well, the horde will start to lose its cohesion, with individual mobs and clans growing too frustrated at the idea that there actually won't be a larger battle to be had, thusly leading them to break away and wander off. Without the unifying drumbeat of constant conquests, and without the steady reinforcements of other eager tribes, there really just isn't all that much incentive for the boys to stick together. And so infighting will quickly consume the remnants of the horde. This period of conflict has often been exploited by Imperial commanders, where they will seek to slay the overarching warlord, then hunker down for a short defensive campaign. And only once they can see the horde disintegrate into smaller mobs will they sally out to encircle and exterminate the fractured tribes one at a time. Indeed, when a war boss does finally kick the bucket, the largest knobs will quickly squabble over who gets to name themselves as the new boss. But in a vast war, there might be hundreds of prospective successors, all of whom think they've got what it takes, but none of whom are known or respected by the wider warband. What follows is usually the aforementioned chaos of tribal infighting, with every ambitious orc stepping forward to grab what loot and followers he can, before either leading his new mob towards a quick defeat, or out into the stars to find some quiet realm to raid and plunder. Even a profoundly successful war might one day meet the same fate, as the orcs are notoriously bad at sitting idle. And after the excitement of a big campaign, many will simply get bored of how long it takes to resupply such an enormous hoard, leading to an exodus of the boys, and thus a disintegration of the war. The boss will obviously try to prevent them from leaving, but he can't be everywhere at once. And before too long, he might find that enough of the orcs have departed and taken enough of the loot with them that he just cannot convince the remaining mob that he has the size nor resources to launch another successful invasion. By this point, he is now no longer really a warlord. Sure, he's still a boss, but he's not the boss. And even though he might still be mean and green, if he can't control the barbaric rabble beneath him, then he's just not really fit to lead the boys. The rival bosses who departed from the main group might not get very far, building modest settlements out in the wastes of whatever planet they find themselves on. But this still results in the collapse of the great warband into a series of disparate tribes, who will only be able to come together once more if a strong enough boss steps forward and crushes all others into submission, thusly restarting the life cycle of the Orc War. Any world which once found itself at the end of an Orc warband will, unfortunately, find itself to be dealing with a constant plague of feral and tribal orcs for many decades, centuries, and possibly millennia to come. And given enough time, those feral orcs will one day find themselves led by a particularly brutish leader, one who is big enough to best all others. And one by one, the squabbling tribes will unify again under the promise of fresh conquest, until the boys are finally ready to leave the world once more on what they all believe will be a never-ending war. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this sermon on the life cycle of an Orc War in its entirety. And I do hope you enjoyed watching the Greenskins rise and fall in their endless pursuit of war. For now, however, we've all heard well enough of the Orcs, and so I shall once again close this chapter on the brutes. And until we meet again, I shall wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.